You're listening to the WFYI Weekly News Podcast for Friday, February 5th, 2016. I'm Christopher Ayers. This week, after Republican lawmakers at the Indiana State House killed a gay rights bill, some State House Democrats are refusing to let the issue go.
There is going to be a talk over here in the House of Representatives, even if the leaders of this chamber are uncomfortable with the discussion.
A school official from a small Indiana town looks to take on State Superintendent Glenda Ritz this November.
Well, I think it's extremely important to put politics aside and put students before politics.
And a report on long wait times at the doctor's office. Those stories and more are coming up. Please stay tuned. The debate over LGBT rights at the Indiana State House seemed to be effectively over earlier this week. That's after Senate lawmakers killed a bill meant to extend civil rights protections to lesbian, gay, and bisexual Hoosiers. But Democrats in the Indiana House say they won't let the LGBT rights debate die this session. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports, House Democrats are looking for ways to work the issue into another bill, although that's a scenario that Republican House Speaker Brian Bosma says isn't likely.
The gay rights bill, Senate Bill 344, failed to advance out of the Senate before the session's first half deadline, after Republican leadership said they couldn't muster enough support for the measure. But House Minority Leader Scott Pilath says Democrats won't give up on the issue using whatever methods they can.
There is going to be a talk over here in the House of Representatives, even if the leaders of this chamber are uncomfortable with the discussion.
That effort could involve Democrats trying to amend LGBT rights into another bill. But generally speaking, amendments must be what's called germane to be included, meaning the subject matters must be similar. Speaker Brian Bosma says he doesn't think such a bill exists.
A major change in our civil rights code that's highly controversial, as depicted by the discussion surrounding 344, it's really not appropriate subject matter to try to do on the fly in the second reading amendment.
On the Democrat side, Pilath says he hasn't yet identified which bills his caucus will target for such an amendment. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
Indiana's 2016 elections got a little more interesting last week when current Yorktown School Superintendent Jennifer McCormick announced she will challenge Glenda Ritz in the race for state superintendent. State Impact Indiana's Claire McInerney talked to McCormick in between campaign events about her vision for Indiana's education system.
So what prompted you to join this race and get into politics after such a long career in education?
There's been a lot of frustration, and I know sitting in the superintendent seat at the local level, many of us have felt that. But with the lack of leadership and a vision at the DOE, it has had a huge impact on many schools. And through that frustration, I've decided just to step up and try to do something about that.
So what do you mean by there's a lack of leadership at the DOE that affected you as a superintendent?
Yeah, I think when communication is either splintered or not there, and things appear to be very disorganized, it greatly impacts the local level on how we operate, how we carry through on mandates, or whether it's suggestions, how we communicate to our staff, how we communicate to our parents. It's a domino effect.
And it has been no secret that our current Superintendent Glenda Ritz and Governor Pence have publicly disagreed and not gotten along. Do you think running as a Republican would improve the relationship between the Department of Education and the governor's office?
Well, I think it's extremely important, once again, to put politics aside and put students before politics. I know that's difficult to do, but it takes very purposeful communication. It takes relationships that are at least professional. I think I would bring, that first step into, and not just with the governor, but it takes relationships with the legislators and professional organizations that are out there that communication is lacking in. It takes communications with a lot of local schools. I mean, everyone has to be involved in that team effort. But I think, it would be very important to rebuild those relationships. That's extremely important to what we're trying to accomplish.
So I kind of want to talk about some issues and your stance on those. Under the Every Student Succeed Act that the federal government just passed, states now have this opportunity to change how we use assessments. Our current legislature has talked about ditching ISTEP, maybe utilizing some of these things that are in ESSA. What's your stance on assessing students every year?
currently, many of us are running an assessment system at the local level that is formative, that's ongoing. So we have an ongoing assessment of student performance. None of that formative assessment is aligned to the summative assessment. So many of us are running the assessment systems now that are very splintered. So cleaning that up would be a huge relief to not only teachers, but administrators and parents. It's very difficult to explain to a parent, here's, you know, the beginning of the year, middle of the year, and the end of the year based on a formative assessment. But according to the summative assessment, it's way off. And that's very difficult to explain to a parent. So really, where is your child? How are they performing? Where are those gaps? That's a very complex system. It's going to take more than just the Department of Education in isolation to come up with a solution for that. But, you know, that again is going to take a team effort, but it has to happen.
All right. And then another issue that's really important in Indiana school choice. We've seen expansive charter laws passed and more money put into the voucher program in the state. What do you stand or where do you stand on the issue of school choice here in the state?
You know, for me, you know, being in a public school, I've lived, you know, the money issue is what I think a lot of people get, you know, where it becomes an issue for public schools. But every time, I mean, I'm a firm believer of, you know, if the environment at a particular school does not fit the child's needs, then there are other opportunities. And I would not, you know, tell a parent any differently. I've had many sit in my office and we've talked through things and I'm very blunt about if this isn't a good fit, you owe it to your child, you owe it to yourself to find a good fit.
Would you support or stand behind, you know, for example, the governor putting more money into vouchers as the state has done the last few years?
Well, and I won't speak for the governor, so I don't know what his intentions are, but, you know, that's a legislative decision.
That was Republican candidate for State Superintendent Jennifer McCormick talking with State Impact Indiana's Claire McInerney as she traveled between campaign events after announcing her candidacy last week. Patients seeking an appointment with certain types of doctors need to be prepared to wait, especially if they want to see some specialty physicians. Sometimes it can be months before the doctor has an opening. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Sarah Fentum takes a look at long wait times for dermatologists, a problem which may be emblematic of larger issues that plague the medical field.
It can take a long time to make a dermatologist appointment in Indiana.
Hi, you Health Arnett Central Scheduling. This is Tammy. How may I help you?
Hi. I was wondering how long it would take for me to get a dermatologist appointment.
It depends on, let me pull you up here first. What's the date of birth?
That's me attempting to find a doctor.
Our actual dermatologist is booking out a year.
I eventually found a doctor who would see me in 2 months. It turns out that wait time is actually pretty good. I called multiple dermatologists in West Central Indiana, and the median wait time was 8 weeks, with some doctors, like you just heard, scheduling months and months into the future. For comparison, other specialties, such as otolaryngologists or urologists, had median wait times about one-fourth to one-half that amount.
Yeah, it's been a problem, really, since the early 90s.
Crawfordsville dermatologist Linda Spencer has worked at her private practice for more than 25 years. For people in Montgomery County, she's literally the only local option. Have people ever talked to you or expressed their own frustration about how long it takes to wait?
All the time.
She says patients usually need to wait anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks before they see her.
It is a problem. And, you know, unfortunately, as long as we have a maldistribution of dermatologists, it's going to persist.
She says the long wait times are a product of simple supply and demand. She says it takes a certain type of person to become a specialty physician. Those types of people, or their spouses, often choose to live and practice in urban areas, not places like the relatively rural Montgomery County. But though location may be a limiting factor, the number of students who want to be dermatologists isn't. What is, says UC San Francisco School of Medicine dermatology professor Jack Resnick, is that there just aren't enough dermatology residency spots available to produce enough skin doctors.
Both on the supply side and on the demand side, different factors that are pushing it, but supply is a big piece of it.
Funding for residency programs, dermatology or otherwise, comes from the federal government through Medicare and Medicaid dollars. but that funding was frozen in the mid-90s. Because of the freeze, some hospitals have started to fund residency slots independently. And Resnick says that's led many specialties to compete for scarce resources available to fund residency programs, with some losing out.
Dermatology, being a small specialty, hasn't been able, with those limited resources, to kind of compete for increases.
And he says dermatology isn't the only specialty suffering from the so-called residency bottleneck. Resnick mentions a concerning lack of primary care physicians, especially in rural areas, a problem Indiana has faced for years, and one which some hospitals are trying to solve through new rural medicine programs. Meanwhile, the demand for dermatologists has actually gone up. Sources attribute that to an increase in referrals from general practitioners and increased rates of skin cancer diagnoses. Crawfordsville doctor Linda Spencer says skin doctors can simply cure more problems now. But Phil Miller, vice president of communications at the medical staffing and consulting company Merritt Hawkins, has a less generous reason.
In one sense, you might chalk it up to the vanity of the American public.
He says there's been an increase in aesthetic and non-medical procedures, such as Botox, tattoo removal, and body sculpting. However, UC San Francisco's Jack Resnick points out cosmetic dermatology only counts for about 8%, or one of every 12 procedures an average dermatologist performs. And Miller says not only are there not enough doctors coming into the market, there are too many leaving the profession, too.
Like a lot of other specialties, dermatology in general is aging as a specialty. So you have a lot of physicians who are getting up towards retirement age, possibly slowing down or retiring.
He says dermatologists have offset the demand by using so-called extenders, such as physician's assistants or nurse practitioners. Linda Spencer in Crawfordsville says using one has made her job a lot easier, even though it still takes an average of 6 to 8 weeks to make any kind of appointment. In the meantime, many students and the people who would one day be their patients will just have to wait. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Sarah Fenton in West Lafayette.
Finally this week, an Arlington High School football player was found dead in a car of an apparent shooting in the 4400 block of Park Forest Court in Indianapolis Wednesday, just south of the Northeast Side School. WFYI education reporter Eric Weddle is spending the entire year reporting from the school. He has this report.
At the start of school Thursday, Arlington staff held an assembly to tell students that Jalen Murray was killed. The death of the popular 16-year-old junior plunged the school into a state of shock and mourning. The football team converged into a classroom to be alone, while other students gathered in the media center to talk with crisis counselors or create banners to honor Jalen. Alyssa Helm, a student who helped manage the football team, described Jalen as the most honest person she's known. She and others cried in the hallway with friends and staff.
I mean, it's a part of life that people die. It's just the fact that that it was him and the way he died. Everybody's just trying to take that in all at once.
Principal Stan Law says the shooting death of a student is sadly inevitable in today's Indianapolis. But that seemed at odds for Jalen, who had just started a job, bought a car, and had strong support outside of school from friends and even some Arlington staff.
Try to guide him, try to direct him, try to protect him from every angle. But you can only do so much. That's the unfortunate part, to lose such a promise in life at so young of an age and so violent of a way. It's incomprehensible.
IMPD continues the investigation into the death. For 90.1 WFYI News, I'm Eric Weddle.
You can read more of Eric's reporting from Arlington High School in Indianapolis for his series, A New Day. Just go to WFYI.org/A New Day. That's it for this edition of the WFYI Weekly News Podcast. You can follow us online at WFYI.org. on Twitter at WFYI News, and on Facebook, just search WFYI. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. You can stream it on the web at SoundCloud. Just search WFYI there as well. This podcast is a production of WFYI News. The stories you hear on this podcast come from Indiana Public Broadcasting stations. It was produced at 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Studios, located on North Meridian Street in the heart of the Circle City, Indianapolis. I'm Christopher Ayers. Thanks for listening.